Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
And we are now tuned in at episode 540 of Off the Cuff Radio, man. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin. And I'm usually on the air tonight with my co-host, T-Max, with the Fags, but unfortunately he had a personal issue that he had to deal with. So I'm going to be holding this down for Dolo for him tonight. We're sending our prayers out to him and hoping that everything gets situated with that. And I also want to acknowledge my co-host in spirit, Eli the Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. And this show is sponsored by Screwball Radio. Big shout out to Black Poet and Comet. You can check that show out tomorrow night on Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, 8 Central Time. It's also sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Jesse Boutique, and Core Financial. And man, tonight's guest, this will probably go down as possibly one of my personal favorite shows. Reason being, because this man here, who was a part of Beats by the Pound, who is now known as the Medicine Man, alongside KLC, Craig B, Carlos Stevens, DJ Daryl, and Odell, all those coldest hits that you knew and loved from No Limit, the biggest hits were contributed by this team. And this man still is putting it down on the solo tip, just like the track that we played just now, the Naked Head Love. Talented songwriter, composer, producer, along with his own solo work, and he's here to tell his story. Let's welcome the legendary Moby Dick to Off the Cuff Radio, man. What's good?
What's happening, man? Man, I see how we busting it wide open right there, man. I heard that song, but you know, I was like, man, he dug that one up and he picked that one to open it up with. You hear me? So, bro,
man.
It's a blessing to be here. Blessing to be here still ticking and putting out music, brother.
Yes, sir, man. We had to bust that one right there, man, because you know it's February, Valentine's month, you know what I'm saying? So we got to spread the love. You know, we got to put that energy out there.
Absolutely, brother. Appreciate that.
Definitely, man. And for anybody that want to build, the call number is 516-531-9596. You want to leave any shout-outs, you want to ask Moby any questions or submit me any questions that's respect. So let's get on to it, man. Tell us what kind of projects you've been going on lately. What you have going on for 2023?
2023, man. First off, man, I'm going to brush it open with, I got my book coming out, man. I got a book that's going to be dropping here later this month. I will post it on the social media. The date is tentative right now because we're dealing with the distributors, but it will be out this month. The book title is called The Moby Dickopedia. Subtitle is Life, Language, and Lyrics. So check out for that book, my first ever published book. And also, I'm coming out with another project, another album coming soon. It's going to be out in March. So look out for that one as well. The title is not to be disclosed yet. I will disclose it later on social media.
Yeah. Now tell us about the book, man. How long did it take you to complete that process? Because I know writing the book is like totally different creative process as well as distributing. It's totally different from recording an album.
Man, it's really different, man, because I had to go through the – you got to think of the title. The title is called The Moby Dickopedia. So the book is actually, you know, like it's an encyclopedia of me. You know what I'm saying? Instead of doing it like in a direct autobiography, it's a semi-autobiography. Pretty much it's an autobiography, but it's done in an encyclopedia reference format. And so it's detailed, you know, per segment. Like I said, it's a partition in three parts. The first part is about my life, you know, my formative years all the way up to No Limit. And mm-hmm. Also the second part is called language. So it's the language is we, you know, where I'm from, we speak a peculiar language in South Central Louisiana, like you hear your Hermit, you know what I'm saying, the Humbra, like
yeah.
stuff that, you know, the way we talk is very peculiar to us. So what I did, I defined a couple of those terms and phrases in that section. And then in the lyrics, it's the songs that I'm known for. You know, the songs that I put out at No Limit, I got those in a lyric format. So, you know, just give people different segments of me, of Moby Dick. So that's why it's called a Moby Dickopedia. So it's going to be a real enjoyable piece to read.
And going into the album that you're coming out with in March, like, tell us about what's going to be the creative difference that you went going into creating this project in comparison to the other ones that you previously put out.
Well, each album that I do is unique within itself. I want it to be its own organism. You know what I'm saying? Each album has its own title. Like you start with Gangsta Harmony, you go to the next album I put out after that, Post No Limit, was called Perverted Excursion. So this album is pretty much is going to dig a little deeper into where I'm at now in life, my thought process, as opposed to where I was. You know what I'm saying? So as we evolve, there's one thing about it, as artists, we don't like to be contained in the box, even though the fans and the supporters, they like to hear more of us, but we grow as well because we would love our audience to grow with us, you know, and our supporters to grow with us. So just the way I see life now, the things that I've been through, the things that I experienced, and today's current events, you know, I'm on top of all that. So I'm just sharing put my two cents in on what's been going on, and within it, this I could say this much. This is the only project that I won't have any features. I could tell you that much. It won't have no features. But I do have production from some of my go-to guys like S.E. Trill. He did some production on here. He's from Wichita, Kansas. My fraternity brother, who's a keyboard virtuoso, he also was marched with me in Southern University Band. He goes by the name of LaShawn Gary. So you can look him up now. LaShawn is spelled LaShawn Gary, Gary, and he's a jazz virtuoso. So he has some works on his own out there in on all digital platforms, you know. So also, yeah, I got some, you know, some talent on this, man. So I'm kind of just, you know, saving that for like I like the element of surprise. So I don't like to give away too much, you know what I'm saying, about what this
right.
album is, you know what I'm saying. But I can tell you it's fire. And I can tell you this much, my greatest work up to this day. My greatest work.
That's what it is, man. And for those who just tuning in, you know, because, you know, we also have a young fan base as well. The key and the reason why we want to bring you on the show, man, is, you know, to let people tell your story and about your origins and everything. So for those who just listening, you know, just coming up and follow up on your history, man, tell us about what it was like growing up in Morgan City, Louisiana, during that time period.
Man, I can tell you this much about Morgan City. A lot of people don't know about Morgan City, but, you know, if you're not from Louisiana or from that part of Louisiana, Morgan City is known for, we have every Labor Day weekend, we have what you call a shrimp and petroleum festival. So there's two different industries that we're known for, the seafood, because we're in close proximity to the Gulf of Mexico and the petroleum industry. You know what I'm saying? A lot of boats and stuff like that. They ship out of Morgan City and Houma, you know what I'm saying, straight into the Gulf of Mexico to drill for oil. So I grew up in a very industrial town. Some people would call it the country, but you know, nothing country about us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we good people. That's the most country thing about us. We're very family oriented. But you know what I'm saying? And, a lot of the prison industry is really, you know, really the biggest industry out there in the state of Louisiana. And we have a good amount of us in the prison population in, throughout Louisiana. And, you know what I'm saying, it's to let you know the streets are real out there as well, just like any other place. And I would say, you know, it wasn't easy growing up there as well. But, you know, but I could say this much, man. I come from a tight-knit community, which is on the outside of the core city core limits of Morgan City. It's called Syracuseville, and we call it CC Waterbound, which CC stands for Chocolate City. And it's near three bodies of water, which is the Bayou Ramus, Lake Palud, and the Atchafalaya River. And you know what I'm saying? We come off with that good gumbo, that good crawfish, you know what I'm saying? And the good, good family, I mean, good morals and values, man. I grew up in the church, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I had my little taste of the street life, you know what I'm saying? But primarily, man, I come up in a good household, in which, you know, we were raised on morals and values and education, you know what I'm saying? So it's values come out there, man. So I can tell you that much about Morgan City. We got some good people came out there. Garrett Morris, he's the first black actor that was on Saturday Night Live. He's from there. Dave Johnson, he played basketball for the Syracuse Orangemen and also the Chicago Bulls, and you know, we got some good notables came out there, so you know, it's a nice little dot on the map.
That's what it is, man. And we have my co-host T Max on the line, man. What's good, man? We building with the legendary Moby Dick, man.
Man, God bless to you both. Off the Cuff Radio, we here. What it is, man? Moby Dick, legend of the South. Wrote the soundtrack for a lot of our lives down here from VA or NC and beyond. Yeah, man. What's going on?
Man, God bless you, brother, man. Good to be here. Good to hear your voice. And the queen is, you know, is a pleasure, my brother.
Definitely. Look, dude, I overheard the part about you writing the book and everything. I'm putting my bid in now, man. I got to get a copy of it. But wait, look, E-40 been teasing us for all these years about the Lingo book. We're glad to get your book coming out in terms of breaking down the whole Southern Hemisphere in terms of how y'all get down with everything out there, man.
Absolutely, man. This is pretty exciting, man. I've been working on it for a hot little second. I can tell you this. Shout out to my cousin, Renee Olivas. He told me, man, he said, man, with all your know-how and your experience in the music industry, you pioneer, you know, Beast by the Pound. And it's crazy. It never dawned on me the magnitude of who I am. You know, when I first heard that word legend tied to my name, I'm like, wow. You know what I'm saying? So, like I said, you can't make this stuff up. I don't know if we can cuss on here. You say you can't make this
shit
up.
Yeah, we can. Look, say whatever you feel.
They say you can't make this shit up, man. So real talk, man. A lot of the stuff that I experienced, you know what I'm saying, it's some unique experiences, man. So by my cousin and a couple of other people were just saying, man, you need to write a book, you know what I'm saying, with everything that you experienced. Not only No Limit, but prior to No Limit, after No Limit, you know what I'm saying? Put your experiences in the book. And I finally did it, man. I'm like, you know, let me do this. And put it out there. And it was a process doing it. Like the brother said, man, it's not like making an album, because I had to go back and dial up some things from, man, childhood, some stuff. Because working at No Limit, man, it was a lot of work at No Limit. So we didn't have cameras on deck. We didn't have time to write journals. We didn't have time to write journals and stuff like that. So I had to go up and I had to even go to some of my constituents, you know, like Kale and all them, and ask them, man, how did this really go, man? K. Lou, shout out to them. A couple of my partners that was with me there, like some of the stuff that was just like a blur to me. I had to be like, man, I got this right to make sure I'm on point. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man. So it's a blessing to be able to still be alive and put that information out and share with the rest of the world.
Mo B, it's an honor to have you with us because you are one of the geniuses, one of the legends, you know, one of the stalwarts of the Southern Sound. When you go back, and I followed you on IG, you know, Nike TNBA, so I definitely will send you the info because we definitely, King will send it to you as well. We definitely want to get that book and promote it. When you look back at that time, what was it like in terms of really understanding the impact you all had when No Limit really started to blow?
Man, like I said earlier, we Beat Spotter probably could tell you this much. We were the workhorses. You know what I'm saying? Because you look at that 1 year, that 1 year span between 1997 and 98, man, we put out about 30-something, damn near 40 albums, man, between those 2 years. And we never stopped, you know what I'm saying? We outworked the equipment sometimes. And, we just, it was like with the Beast by the Pound, it was like revolving doors of artists. You see, we had a plethora of artists. We had like a whole army, a whole platoon, several platoons within one army that was coming in and out of that studio. And some of those artists even put out 2 projects, you know what I'm saying? So it never stopped. P was I don't recall too many times. I think I can count on one hand. I remember this man going to sleep because I could say, like I said, James Brown was the hardest man, working man in show business. I can honestly say my cousin Master P was the hardest working man in hip hop during that era, and he's still going, man. The man still putting out product and all that. Salute to my cousin. He's still making moves in the cereal business and stuff like that. Noodles and stuff like that, chips, still doing this thing. But what I can say, work ethic to our success, we never stopped working, and we always get the fans what they wanted, man. So and it was just amazing to look one day on Billboard and in the magazine, The Source back then, the Vibe magazine or Murder Dog, just to see the spreads with all our stuff in it, you know, the reviews and the Source and so on and so forth, because that was a dream come true. My name, you know, in that, and along with my cousins and my friends in there, you see that we really made an impact. And not only to hear, because I didn't get to see it myself, but I heard about the stories of the lines that was, you know, on Tuesdays, the lines were wrapping outside these mom-and-pop stores, and to hear those stories, it was nothing shorter than amazing, brother. Nothing shorter than that.
And you know what's dope about how you guys do it? Because, you know, me being behind, you know, working with studios and paying attention to sound, I like how y'all, when y'all started, y'all had a traditional Bay Area, West Coast regional sound, and around that time period, y'all switched to the gutter gumbo Louisiana sound. And it sounds like 2 different periods.
That's because it was. There's 2 different periods because P started out in the Bay Area, you know.
And California.
When California, Richmond, California, the Bay Area. And then when myself, the 3 niggas abroad, myself, Servon, KLC went up there, that's when things changed because he got attached to his roots again. And then he ultimately made the choice to move back to Louisiana, and that's when all the magic and that, like you said, that gumbo and all that stuff started coming into play.
Man, look, Moby, the first time I heard about it, it knocked me off my feet a little bit because I was like, this is around 95 when the album True, the debut album comes out. So I'm in Hampton Roads, Virginia myself, Chesapeake to be exact. So this is like a situation, shout out to BET and Rap City. When they first hit it, it was like nothing I had ever heard before. And the more I heard, I was like, oh, shit. I'm like, you know, so, yeah, but this was during the time in the mid-90s, rather, where, you know, of course, Source, XXL wouldn't come until 97. Vibe wouldn't come until 96. So this is where you're pretty much, and social media was non-existent. So this is a time where you're simply looking to the music shows to really, like, that was our news in terms of who the new artists were. Word Up Magazine, you know, Black V, all that was around back then. Shout out to John Blasting Gang. But it was like, when you all came with a force that literally was, it just turned hip-hop upside down on its ear, man. And it still resonates to this day in terms of the impact that you all had, the influence and the legacy. When you look at what you all collectively did, and then when you transitioned off onto your own solo endeavors, you're a respected legend. You're a godfather in this. You are, you know, every bit of a gatekeeper for the South. What is it like to know years later that, you know, and still being able to do this at a high level, and still, this is why we do shows like this, to get stories from people like yourself. I mean, how does that feel years later, and you still got the love, you still got a passion? I mean, what more can I say?
Man, all I can say is, man, all praise due to the Most High Creator, man, for being able to be instrumental, you know, one, because all we looked at it as back in that time was us respecting, expressing ourselves the way we knew how, and in our unique way. Like we said, we have a peculiar language, we have a peculiar style, peculiar fashion, because you can't forget the camouflage that we brought to the table as well. You know, camouflage became super popular then. Not saying that no one was wearing it, but the camouflage became the thing to wear because, you know, we represented, you know, a military type of, you know, vibe to go along with the street anthems and the marches and stuff like that. You know, because we come from a culture of bands, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Marching bands, the HBCU bands, you know what I'm saying? That's what we do. You know, I played in Southern University band myself. That's going to be captioned in the book itself. I got that material under my true story of everything that the makings of who Moby Dick is. You know what I'm saying? Who y'all know as Moby Dick. But to watch that unfold and see it still resonate right now to this day, like you just said, the impact that we had is, man, look, I'm like, it's humbling, man, to me. You know what I'm saying? Because some people say that I'm humble to a fault because it's just who I am. I see that's something that I do naturally, like breathing and walking and shitting on the toilet and pissing. I look at it as something that I do, like eating. You know what I'm saying? So, and to see that it's appreciated and celebrated on the next level, man, is nothing short of a blessing, man. And I'm to be here and witness it. And to talk to you guys about it on this platform, man, I'm still humble. It don't stop. The humility don't stop, man. So I thank everybody who appreciated it, man, and everybody who stood out in those lines to buy the music and still downloading it in this download era right now. Man, I just appreciate it all, brothers. Just appreciate all of
them. Man, I mean, MOV, I mean, yeah. Oh, go ahead, King.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man. Taking it back to your origin. First of all, I ask this for a lot of guests, man. I ask, how did you come up with your stage name, Moby Dick?
I tell you what, man. This is what I'm gonna have to say for the book. It's in there. You know, I told that before, man. It's not what you think. You know, I can say that much. It's not what you think. And I'm gonna say this here. P, when we were working on a particular song, because I had several stage names prior to when I made up my mind it was going to be Moby Dick, and it had to fit with, you know, what I was doing at the time, you know what I'm saying? Because I went through different phases as a hip-hop artist, because now a lot of people don't know that I rap as well, you know what I'm saying? I was an MC too, you know, and a singer, so that and a producer, always been that. But I never really showcased that much of it at no limit, because we had so many MCs. And I was called Cool Jazz before I was Moby Dick, you know what I'm saying? So I said, nah, that's not going to fit within this. So I had to go on and come up with Moby Dick and the story that I just want people to go on and just get that book and figure that one out. Go find that one. You know what I'm saying? It was like a scavenger. Get that one out the book.
Yeah, and I mean, Moby, one thing about it is that you spoke so passionately and lovingly about your background in the band. Of course, another Bay Area legend, E-40, you know, he was in the band, you know.
And Grambling.
Grambling, you were Southern. How do you feel about how HBCUs have gotten such a renaissance of attention and notoriety? And shout out to my HBCU, Norfolk State University, for being voted the best HBCU band in the land. Behold the green and gold, go Spartans. From a sense of academia and music and overall, you know, just high profile, how does that make you feel, especially being an alumnus of an HBCU, to see our institution getting so much reverence and respect and, you know, notoriety now?
Well, I got two layers to that answer. Number one, that is overdue. It's been over because we've been thriving in all curriculum, especially in education, in law, in, you know, the sciences. You know, you got to think George Carver, George Washington Carver, you know, at Tuskegee, you know
Tuskegee,
what I'm saying?
I look at
Charles Drew, you know what I'm saying? All those come from HBCUs and the agricultural aspect, you know what I'm saying? Not just in arts, you know what I'm saying? Because they look for us to be the jigaboos and, you know, to be the entertainers. But we've been excelling at a high level in, like you said, in academia, man. So we've been shining. You know what I'm saying? But they just haven't been giving us that credit. You know what I'm saying? So in the bands, you know, you can hear like the bands like LSU, because a lot of people don't know that LSU's band, their band director now is a Jackson State alumni. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
So yeah, man. So that's why you hear them playing that Neck. You know that song, Neck, they've been playing? So that's the first band I heard play Neck. Was when I was at Southern, and TSU blew that out. When we went visit them, we played them on. That was in 1986 when I first heard. That's the first band I ever heard play Neck, and it was Texas Southern. You know what I'm saying? So, but mm-hmm. The next layer to that, all praise due to God that they say this. They claim this man was an HBCU. But he shined a lot of light on HBCU, and that's Deion Sanders, Coach Prime.
Absolutely.
He brought a lot of light to it and brought value to it. And he let it out of his mouth. And where the money at? A lot of these PWIs are getting all this money to play these big games, but they want to put the HBCUs on the schedule. But then, hey, man, he like, well, hey, how much y'all going to pay us to play this game for y'all to beat the shit out of us? You know what I'm saying? So he like,
right.
I'm going to put them my kids out in that water. Y'all got to pay us like seven figures instead of six figures. You know what I'm saying? Somewhere in a seven-figure, you know, ballpark. So, but I feel real good about the HBCUs because now we're finally, after so many years, I don't know which one is the oldest HBCU, but I know Howard is somewhere up there in one of the oldest ones, and being in, you know, in the area where the place that Benjamin Banneker built, if you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he built the first working clock. Yeah.
And he also was the civil engineer of Washington D.C. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the thing is now it's a long time coming for us for our institutions of higher learning to get it just due. Now we got to get the money. They got to pay. They got to put the money where their mouth is now.
Yeah, yeah, man. I think that's I was gonna say this too, man. Like in regard with the Deion Sanders, man, it's like that guy brought new traction to the state of Mississippi. I mean, we talk about ESPN coverage because I don't think those games were getting ESPN coverage like that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Yeah, they
not,
were.
Man.
It's funny, y'all, because ESPN would cover them. They would do it sporadically. Even going back about 10, 15 years, they would have it on ESPN2 where they would, you know, where they would cover the games. But because, like you said, Moby, what Deion did in terms of bringing a profile to it, he put it in a fashion because it was always, when you look at Mississippi Valley State, you know, where Jerry Rice played, when you look at Texas Southern, where Michael Strahan played, you know, Rick Mahorn of the Pistons, he played at Hampton, I believe. You know,
Steve McNair,
Alcorn State University. You know, Bobby Danridge played at Norfolk State. You know, so there is countless legends. You know, Felicia Rashad, she went to Howard. Matter of fact, so did Kamala Harris. She went to Howard. So this is the pedigree, the distinction of HBCUs is deep. It is royalty. It is absolutely awesome in black excellence of achievement and advancing the culture and our people. And it's like you said, it's great to see us not being looked at as second rate anymore in terms of, you know, we're here, we've been here, and guess what? We not going nowhere with it. Just had to say that. And my brothers, you know, we all agree because we're all pro-black for our people. Wanted to get to another question for you, Moby. When you look at the new generation of New Orleans hip-hop, when you look at artists like Currency, you know, and all of them who've been around but also, too, have been kind of carrying on that flag, you know, of course, shout out OG Bezel, you know, St. Mac 504, you know, all the crew. How does it feel knowing that next generation is moving ahead? You know, G.I. Barbie, what's it like just seeing that new generation coming ahead and still keeping it, you know, tradition, maintaining, and just waving that flag down bottom, man.
Man, I'm proud of every last one of them youngsters. I consider them my babies, man. Even though they're grown men and women, but in this aspect, they're my babies, man. Because to say that, you know, that they're waving that banner, and you know, and that we were able to help open the gates, open the doors for those, and for them to come through, marching through there, and doing what they do. Shout out to Spitter, man. Like we currently, we call him Spitter, man. We got some other
guys
out there, man. We got another guy on the upcoming. Goes by the name of I'm tripping. I got a brain fart right now.
It's okay.
I'm about to slap myself in the face. Man, I'm gonna dig this up in a little bit, man. But he got another guy coming up, man. A couple of more guys and girls coming up there. Oh, 3D Natty, man. Don't forget
3D Natty. Oh my goodness, she is. Ooh, she is.
Female Spitter.
Yes. How could we forget her?
Spitter, man. They got this dude by the name of Rob 49 out there. You know what I'm saying? You know, man. They got some spitters coming out there, man. Real talk. You know what I'm saying? So it's real good to see this new generation representing, you know, New Orleans, man, in the state of Louisiana, man. We got to look at the new youngsters, our Louisiana NBA young boy. You know, not just New Orleans.
Boosie, can't forget Boosie Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I consider Boosie more or less a. He's an OG because he came from the concentration camp. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He came from the concentration camp. And he's like a midway. He came up like pretty much out of, you know, I would say the late 90s, early 2000s. You know what I'm saying? Or the guy who had a brain fart on, he goes by the name of Paco Trosclair. Look out for him, man.
Okay.
P-A-C-O.
Okay.
T-R-O-X Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, Paco Trox Claire. He's bubbling, man. And then we got people in other genres, you know what I'm saying? That's this guy by the name, like in the R&B, I like him a lot. He goes by the name of Lucky Day. Excuse me, you ever heard of him?
Yeah.
I like him a lot, man. You know what I'm saying? Dope artist coming out of there. Lettuce, you heard of Lettuce? She's from there. You know what I'm saying? A new generation of excellent, you know, and not just in hip hop, but in R&B as well. You know what I'm saying? So, and we got some folk music coming out there, you know, out there as well, that's representing the real culture, the second line portion, man. Trying to think of this guy's name, real dope, because he just did some stuff that's celebrating the Indians, you know what I'm saying, the Wild Chapatula. So there's a guy who's affiliated with them. You know, he's, I'll think of it later. I'll bring his name up when I get loose from this brain fart. But yeah, man, I'm really proud of these new artists out here, man. And I'm really, really proud of their waving the banner. Because you know it's Mardi Gras season right now, right? The purple, gold, and green. So a lot of that going to be coming out. You know what I'm saying? So I really appreciate them from still holding it down for the state of Louisiana. His name is Flag Boy G. That's his name. He came. I knew my mind was gonna get to work. It goes by the name of Flag Boy G. Dope guy.
Man, and if you all have always brought a certain level of realness that cannot be duplicated. I say this on every show whenever we have an artist from Louisiana. Shout out to our man OG Bezel, because we know respect is very, very, very big for y'all down there. And we know occasionally there were some situations where people, you know what I'm saying, may have said some things they shouldn't have. King and myself always crack up when we bring this up on the show with OG Bezel. We were talking about it, just about beefing and stuff and about how niggas be acting up. And he was like, man, he's like, you say a man name on a track negative, he's like, you got to go see that man. He's like, there ain't no way around it.
I want a lyrical acrobat.
Yeah.
The way of life is totally different.
It really is. I remember one time back in the early hip-hop days where it was battle rap. It was like boxing, like, you know how two boxers would get in the middle of the ring, beat each other down, but then hug each other afterwards and say good fight. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and speaking of fighting, I think, you know, it's just a different era, man, because how did it get to this, man? How did it get to where, you know, you had to be street cred, you had to live out, you know, your lyrics, you had to be incarcerated for your lyrics, like, you know, like Mac, thank God Mac is out. You know, a lot of people who don't know, but Mac is out, man. Think he did 20-something years really behind his name and his lyrics. And then now we come into this paradigm to where, hey, man, if you say something to me, I'm coming to see you, man. Come on, bro. So that means, to me, that's bitch made to me. See what I'm saying? You got soft skin. It's like a contact sport. Rap is like a contact sport. If you can't take a hit from a, if you're a running back and you can't take a hit from a linebacker, this ain't the sport for you, bro. You know what I'm saying? So just know that this comes with the territory. If somebody says something, whatever it is, it's part of that sport, man. And but to kill somebody, man, rest in peace, Take Off, and everybody who died before him. You know what I'm saying? All these kids ain't making it to live 30 years old. It's unacceptable, bro. You know what I'm saying? So, and I think this narrative needs to be changed, and the guys like from my era need to speak up and come forward and be like, hey, man, y'all doing this all wrong.
It's wild, Moby. You're absolutely right, because the situation is this. Social media gave a lot of these guys you know, steroids in the most artificial of senses. Because back in the day, we've heard about P Street reputation. We've heard about E-40 Street reputation. You know, we've heard about a lot of artists out there who are on the block who are really, really getting it, but you didn't see it broadcast. The streets back in the day, if you were really busy out there, if you was really outside and you was really in the jungle, your name resonated far beyond what any type of rap you spit, because people knew you were authentic. And now, it wasn't a thing, Mo being King, back in the day where it seemed like niggas was embracing deaf culture. It's like now these kids, and I don't want to sound, you know, cheesy or corny with it, but it's like we're seeing a lot of young niggas out here now who really, really, really do not have an understanding of what it really means once you're out there, once you say things about certain people, even once you say about – go ahead.
What it is, man, they see it as a video game. Like social media created an own think tank to where they look at things from like the social media – Call of Duty aspect. They don't see repercussions.
Hey man, we can go down that rabbit hole if y'all want to do that.
Let's do it. We got time. Look, Mosey, we got time. We got time. Let's get it.
I'm just gonna say this. I'm gonna say this off top, and then we're saying is this is off the cuff radio, right? And
it is Friday. Absolutely.
Be truthful about it. This thing is done by design. You know what I'm saying? It's done by design in waves, in layers, and you know what I'm saying? And it's timed perfectly by, you know, the people who designed it. And we look at the video game. That's a good point you just made, brother, about the Call of Duties and the GT Grand Theft Autos, you know what I'm saying, the GTA. That's a great point you just made. Because what that does, in essence, psychologically and in the subconscious with these youngsters, it desensitizes them, period, emotionally, you know what I'm saying, consciously. It desensitizes it. It's like, it's okay, I could just shoot somebody and kill them, and it's nothing. I go get a car, jack a car, it's nothing. Now they got the TikTok videos, I heard. I haven't seen one, but I heard that there's a TikTok video, and like you said, good point that you made with the social media. They got TikTok
about how to steal cars.
Breaking in cars. If that's not Grand Theft Auto, I don't know what it is. What is it? It's Grand Theft Auto. And by the way, Grand Theft Auto's soundtrack is a whole bunch of hip hop. You know what I'm saying? So they're acting out. So what they're doing with these games, you know, like when we were little kids, remember how we used to think that we were Superman and Batman and stuff like that when we were little kids and put on the capes and, you know, jump off of mattresses and stuff like that. And you know what I'm saying? We, you know, the mind, especially a child's mind, is very impressionable. But now with all the stuff and all the drugs and stuff, the super drugs, you know, the fentanyl and everything else that they own, the pills that they're popping. So the mind is very impressionable, and you know, and very programmable. To where they figure that, hey, this game that I'm playing, let me go and act this out in real life, because to them, in their subconscious, that is real life. That is their reality. Because we used to go outside and play basketball. You know what I'm saying? We used to go out, you know, be very creative outside, because our parents made us go outside and get some of that vitamin D and that sunshine and that fresh air out there. But now these kids are enclosed. They're being inside for days, hours, and weeks, and months, just inside with a bag of popcorn and chips and smoking whatever they're smoking, playing a video game. And that's their reality. You know what I'm saying?
And
with the beats on top of that.
And it's wild, y'all, because when we look at it, we look at it from different levels. Like you said, Moby, we got to go dig it up and go down that rabbit hole. What we're looking at is a situation where kids are looking virtually at things that they're trying to live vicariously through, but don't really understand the full psychology of how that affects them. And I don't want to be long-winded, but I got to break it down from every aspect. When we listen to the music today of hip-hop, it's so narrow in terms of what's being played on the radio, where back in the day, we listened to everything. There was variety. That's how our musical education was cultivated in the listening classroom, because it was so diverse in terms of artists, you know, from everywhere. So it was never, we were confined to one particular genre where we were, even if we hated the song, subconsciously we began to like it because we became so forcingly familiar with it. The next point, when we look at video games now, is way more, but we actually went outside, we interacted with each other, we went places, we knew how to communicate in a meaningful way that was authentic and it wasn't fabricated and it wasn't convoluted. There was a real means of trying to get a point across that was merited by face-to-face. You know, now we see a situation where everybody wants to get online, chop it up, talk shit, be like, yeah, come see me, yeah, we're going to run a fade, which nobody a lot of times has the intentions of doing, by the way. But also, too, it gives people that battery in their back, you know, from those devices. And then we get into drug culture. The most we would do back in the day was smoking weed, you know, if anything. Yep. These kids now, they on some stronger, crazier, and more high-power, potent shit that we could ever think of. But when you look at how it was with pills, cocaine, heroin, we were never doing any of that. We looked at those as like, those were the loser drugs. But now that's like being embraced. You know, and we're seeing real live junkies. We're not going to say the names of artists we've seen looking bad out there because of it. But it's like, it's a lot to digest. Look, take the ball with it and run like Gale Sayers, man. Hit it like the rock, run it like the rocket, Moby King. What y'all think?
I think we need to get back to the basic parenting, man. That everything goes back to what's going on in that household. Whether they're being, you know, neglected, if the mom's on the phone, you know, if she's on TikTok, because now mom's on TikTok. You know what I'm saying? Mom making TikTok videos and want to be a social media superstar, and we got kids to raise, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's a paradigm. Those endorphins that it's a lot of people want to feed those endorphins and get high up in those endorphins.
Dopamine, all that.
That's it, dopamine. That's the word I'm looking for. That dopamine. Thank you for the correction, brother. Dopamine is, you know, it's some serious stuff like fame. Like they say, fame is a serious drug, man. Like they say, who is that? Cocaine is a hell of a drug. That Rick James, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But fame is a hell of a drug as well. That attention, that, you know, the likes, the, you know what I'm saying, the dopamines that come from the likes, the comments, and, you know, the look at me and all this type of stuff. Mom is doing that now. And they're doing it with the kids. So where's the real parenting at now? You know what I'm saying? Where's the real parenting at? Where do we draw the line and say, hey, I'm the parent, you're the kid, you know what I'm saying? This is how we do it around here. You know what I'm saying? If you're living in my house. You know what I'm saying? And then with the systematic, like, the way the law has been, has stopped us from disciplining our children. Like a lot of kids, they need some love and an ass whipping at the end of the day, bro. But they, you know, I'm here because I got ass. I used to have to go get my own Switch. You know what I'm saying?
For those in the country like us, y'all know.
You get my own Switch. And I'm 57 years old because of it. I'll be 58 this year. So I'm still alive.
God bless.
You know what I'm saying? All praise to the Most High Creator. But these kids who, like they say, spare the rod, you spare the rod, you know what I'm saying? You know, that And the scripture also said,
train a child in the way they should go.
Train a child in the way they should go and honor thy parents so that thy days on this earth may be longer. You know what I'm saying? So if, and this is, and I got to say this too, brothers. I don't know how y'all feel about
this.
This is the most disrespectful generation that I've ever seen in my almost 58 years of life. I've never saw nothing like that.
But you know, Mo B, you're absolutely right, and we're not, and we don't say this as grumpy old men screaming at the top of a hill, because King, you know, my brother and myself, and so many of our other guests we've talked to on air and off air, we've had our views on this. Part of it is that we look at the our theory, which is not set in stone, but we're willing to put it, we'll carve it in, is that you're seeing these kids come in on their own now. They feel like they didn't really have to do much to get in. So the thing is, we did it our way. We don't need nobody else's say-so or whatever.
Especially these days.
Well, man, we just keep them in prayer, man. Let's lead by example, brothers, man. Do any of y'all have kids? Do y'all have children?
I don't.
No, I don't.
I have my kids range from 26 to 16. You see what I'm saying? And you know, they're respectful, and I thank God that they are, because we raised them on these old values. We got to bring these values back, man. And guess what? You could, ain't nothing wrong with being a surrogate, because we all are surrogates that one day. Because I was raised, like I said, in a country where the village raised one. It takes a village to raise one child. So we just got to be the village again, especially in the community of hip-hop. Especially of the and speaking of the community of hip-hop, I want to send a shout-out to hip-hop. Y'all asked me earlier what I'm doing now, and I will be remiss not to mention I'm embarking on being a member of the hip-hop fraternity, in which Brother Ken Ivey, better known as Pimpin' Ken, you know what I'm saying? He started the hip-hop fraternity. Y'all look that up on YouTube, Google it. It's a real deal, to where we're holding our own accountable. So I think it's going to be a good thing, a good dynamic shift in hip-hop culture and community. I don't think it, I know it. So look that up, hip-hop fraternity.
We need it, because as we see, Moby, there was always situations going on in hip hop. Even we don't necessarily like, it's part of history, so we got to speak on it, even if it's unfortunate history. We look at the violence, of course, that claimed Scott LaRock. We look at Big Stretch from Live Squad. We saw Tupac and Biggie get killed. We saw Big L. So we've already saw a litany of census killings going too. And even in this generation now, it's like we're still seeing it, where a lot of these artists are not understanding, because it's also the when you start having levels of disrespect in the culture, it bleeds, you know, like through the white sheets, and it begins to spill everywhere. You know, you have some of these artists, not all, but some of these newer artists who don't respect the elders, because like I said earlier, they feel like they got on by themselves and nobody put them on. They look at social media was their outlet as the entry level. So the thing is, we didn't have to go through what y'all did. So, yeah, we made our own lane. But the thing is, these people who came before you laid the foundation and the culture of what made it great, that enabled it to be lasting and for you to get in that lane to continue. And then also, too, when you have artists who are just so – back in the day, if there was a beef with somebody, like you said, it was usually battle rap, it was on wax. If you really talk shit about a nigga, it was some serious, serious shit before it really escalated to something else. And now it's like, we got some of these young rappers out here, some of them got killed, they really got crazy talking shit about somebody, acting like nothing was going to happen. And guess what? Something did happen.
It happened.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed, man. We just need a redirection, because, you know, when I remember one time when hip-hop was going in a positive direction. Okay. Hip hop was going. Mm-hmm. We remember the Brand Newbies. We remember Boogie Down Production. We remember
the Afrocentric. The Afrocentric movement.
The the conscious
native
rap.
Tongues.
You know what I'm saying? Conscious native tongues, Public Enemy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I gotta quote my brother Pimp C. God bless Pimp C. Long live Pimp C. He did say in that one infamous interview that he did in Atlanta about social commentary. About social commentary. Yeah, you could talk gangster, you could talk about the drug and talk about, you know, the moral to the story. You know what I'm saying? If you talk about it, talk about what the moral to the story is, because all stories ain't about sunshine. You got some stories about rain and hurricanes and stuff like that. But what is the moral to the story? See what I'm saying? So sort of glamorize and glorify, you know, illegal activity to glamorize killing someone. You know what I'm saying? You know, so when you glorify it and glamorize it, what you think the results are going to be? Once again, I think it's done by design. You know what I'm saying? Because at one time they had, like you said, the Afrocentric and the conscious rap. That was our drum. That was our message to one another to be great and to embrace our greatness. You know what I'm saying? But then at once. The corporates and I'm gonna say the PIC, you know what I'm saying, the prison industrial complex, say, hey man, we don't have enough. The prisons are not full enough. These people are getting smart. They're waking up. So they say, hey man, we need to bring them back in the prison. We need to fill them up in the prison and put some more in the graveyard. We need to change this narrative, and we need to make it more destructive. So in comes that, you know what I'm saying? So notice that everything sounds the same, you know what I'm saying? The same melody, the same energy across the board, you know what I'm saying? Like you said earlier, there's no more variety. Back in the 90s, in the early 90s, in the late 80s, it was way more variety. You had, not saying you didn't have your gangster rap, but gangster rap wasn't all there was.
No. You
know what I'm saying? So that's why.
And even then,
say what you about to say, my brother? Pardon me.
I was just saying that, but even then it wasn't like some of it, when you look at like what NWA did, was straight, which was not the first gangster rap album. It was just the first gangster rap album was Straight Outta Compton to really get big. Ice-T, Ron Page in 86. Yeah, and of course Schoolie D, which you're absolutely right, because we've mentioned on the show before, you know, Schoolie D was the first. Ice-T came a few months with Ron Paige after Schoolie D, but Schoolie D was the first to do it, and then Ice-T came, N.W.A. would come a couple years later. So you're looking at the three albums that were the seminal releases that would influence it. But even then, it was somewhere between real stories and a lot of over-the-top shenanigans. It was not really meant to be taken seriously to a degree, but it was entertaining. Not saying it was less great because it was fantastic, but we knew at that time that wasn't something we were really trying to live. We took it for what it was, for just being a listening pleasure. But and even albums that came after that, it really depicted a real street experience that was not glorified, genuine in terms of the recollections and the narratives. But it was not meant for us to follow off the cliff to do it. Now we see there is just an embrace of violent culture, which the reality is, Mo B and King, is like this. Anyone who's ever been to prison doesn't want to be there. Anybody who's dead wishes, and their loved ones wishes they were alive. You know, there is no glory standing 10 toes in the ground trying to talk your shit to somebody and then getting buried with them 10 toes going up, as opposed to being flat-footed, or you end up flat-lined.
Absolutely, man.
And it's changed. Like you said, the music has changed because it's what's being marketed now. I just had to get it off my chest. Go.
King, you got something to say to that, man?
Yeah, I was going to say this, too, and what's really needed is balance, because a lot of the people that we grew up listening to, they also provided the balance of what, let's say, for example, the Dope Game, right?
Like, everybody today is painting that as one deep brush. Like, you're going to get money. You're going to run this like the Carter. You're going to get all the cars, the clothes. You know what I'm saying? The gorgeous life that everybody aspires to want. But they don't talk about what if you get caught? What if the feds kick in the door and take everything? And that plays on to, like, one of my favorite songs that you guys produced that was on C. Murder's album was A Kick Though. Because we didn't know what a kick though really meant out here. Today broke it down on that song with Pimp C opening verse where they were talking about the feds kicking down the door.
And what about the kids that's got to be subjected to that? If the kids happen to see the police kicking in the door, or when they haul daddy off to jail, or they haul him off in a meat truck, you know what I'm saying? Put him in a body bag. How do the kids respect? And that's what we're dealing with today. You see what I'm saying? We're dealing with that dynamic. But that's why, you know, really, to be honest with you, man, just to turn a channel on that right there.
Go ahead, like
the Kendrick Lamars, the Tyler the Creators. You see what I'm saying? Those are real crap. I'm talking about these guys are real geniuses to me. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you ever heard this guy by the name of Toby Ngwegwe.
Yeah, he's been killing it for a while.
Toby Ngwegwe. See, those are real spitters, lyricists. I'm talking about having their business on the mic. But, you know, they have a cult following. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, you know, they have something that's really need to be heard, need to be, you know, that people need to hear what they're saying. And they're saying some real stuff, man. You know what I'm saying? You can't count out Ye either, man. Kanye West, man, a beast with it. You know what I'm saying? To me, he was the most celebrated one because he was under, for a good while, under the Rockefeller umbrella, you see?
But, right.
There's some guys out there that are saying some things. It's not like they're not out there. They're just not being showcased and just not being highlighted, and no emphasis is being put on. All the emphasis and all the energy is being turned on to the destructive side of things. But whoever listening, any youngster that's listening to it, man, there's music out there. You can Google or YouTube whatever you want, man. You know what I'm saying? I just say to the listeners, you know, be yourself, be unique, don't be a follower, and don't try to do what everybody else is doing. Like if you see, like wherever the crowd's going, like know that sheep are being led to the slaughter. I'm gonna say that again. Where are sheep? And people use this terminology sheep because sheep are like sheep. They're trying to keep up with the Joneses and do what everybody else is doing. So when we talked about, when y'all asked me the question about my latest project that's coming up, you know, I purposely, you know, go in my own lane. You know, it's not about me being relevant. It's about me putting out material that by later on I won't be ashamed of. That when my son gets old enough to listen to it and be like, hey, daddy, you said this. You know what I'm saying? My kids say, daddy, you said that in your record. Oh, daddy, you was this and you was that. So I had enough of that I put out. You know what I'm saying? Not knowing that, you know, that one day I won't have kids. And being adults, we're going to have an adult-to-adult conversation, you know. So we got to be mindful of this material that we're putting out right now. You know what I'm saying? Mindful of that.
Little Moby, you read that same article by Fonte that I did. Because years ago, Fonte wrote an article from Little Brother, and he wrote an article saying, you want to make music in your 20s that when you're 30s, you're not ashamed. Like, what the hell was I thinking?
Real talk, man. I didn't see that article, but I feel him. We on that same frequency. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm like, okay, yeah. I did make some music. Like, damn, I can't play around my mama. I can't play around my daughter in the same room. Like, you know what I'm saying? Damn, I was on some shit then. I was nasty back. You know what I'm saying? You know the deal. This stuff for real. We pack the steel and cats we peel. You know what I'm saying? Like, man, come on, man. Did I take part in that? You know what I'm saying? And the answer is yes. I got to be responsible for the part that I played in it, in that scheme of things. But at 57 years old, I don't think the same. So that's what I meant when I say, well, what I'm doing now, I'm evolving as a person, which makes me evolve as an artist. And now I'm being the change that I want to see. And, you know, that's all I talked about, because I talked about things within the context of the label that was an artist and a producer of. I stayed consistent with that. But even on Gangsta Harmony, on an album that I did with No Limit, I did have some social commentary. If you listen to the whole thing, you go back and listen to it, I have some stuff on there, because I had to be me on there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, of course I was a No Limit soldier, but at the same time, I was being me on there, you know? But, you know, we just stay mindful. And especially with the platform that you guys have, and I think the DJs should take responsibility as well. You know what I'm saying? DJs, you know, hey, man, whatever you playing, you got to understand that, you know, you got lives in your hands as well. You choose to play whatever you want to play on that vinyl or on them speakers. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's a lot of layers to it, man. So, man, we just got to do our part, brother. We just got to do our part.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate, too, man, that our friend K Slay, he was one of the gatekeepers of not only brokering new artists, but also putting a lot of legendary artists onto a new platform and introducing them to a new generation of fans. He was one of the realest gatekeepers we had, and it's unfortunate that, you know, he passed on, and we surely miss him.
Yeah, man. Yes, indeed, man. A good brother right there, too, man. And some of these journalists, you know, we can't, you know, a lot of them want controversy, because they say controversy sells. But, you know, but you're feeding the beast. You're adding fuel to the fire. So if that's the only content that you got on your show is mess, controversy, beef. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and asking those questions and trying to fuel that. You know, I don't want to name them right now, because I don't want to give them no fuel. You know what I'm saying? But they know who they are. You know what I'm saying? So I like y'all platform. You're saying off the cuff, man. We could just talk about the realism and stuff, and we could just be us, man. And I really appreciate y'all having me on there, too, where I can express myself and just share the energy with you guys.
Oh, Def, man, because I feel there's more layers to the story than just, you know, going for cheap clickbait. Like, you got to get, because, you know, we're music pursuers at the end of the day, man. I mean, and then that's what a lot of people are missing, is discussion of the music.
Life creates art, and art creates life. I forgot how that goes. I don't know if I'm saying that right. You know what I'm saying? Life imitates art, and art imitates life. It works hand in hand.
Absolutely.
So brother,
now, when you speak,
brother, what you about to say?
Yeah, just saying. Yeah, but like you said, man, our art imitates life, life imitates art. When you look at how hip hop is covered, Moby, we came up in an era where magazines were the thing. XXL, Source, print media. And now that seems to have been gone by the wayside. And like y'all were just saying, you know, it was covered by real journalists who actually were invested in the culture. This wasn't a passing interest. This was a real passion that they took seriously. And now we got a lot of people who done come into this whole podcasting lane. Not us, of course, because we're damn good and great at what we do. But you got a lot of people who are pretenders rather than real contributors. You got people who are flying a Confederate flag of fake, rather than flying a real flag of real participation in history. How do you feel about how everything is covered now, in terms of, do you feel like because print media is not as much anymore and everybody goes digital, that it's kind of become an error in the express lane where it's more expedited, but it's not authentic as much?
Remember, you know a word that I don't like in terms of that? Trending. Trending. So let's really,
right.
let's elaborate on trending. What trending does, it subtracts originality. Originality goes out the door when you take the consideration of what's trending. So trending means, okay, it's popular, it's what everybody's doing, it's the thing to do now. So we need to, let's do more. Whatever is trending now, we need to do more of it. So that shows identity. So like self-identity and identification with self completely out the window. So in the category of like you say, this journalism, everybody wants the tea now, you know. And I thought the tea was for the bitches or the females, you know what I'm saying? No disrespect to the females. You know, the females talk about the tea, right? You know, with the mess, the gossip, you know. I thought the gossip column was for the female. That's what they do. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or in the barbershop. In the barbers, that's what they do in the beauty shops, right? They talk about the, you know, the ladies' gossip, you know, who fucking whose man and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Who man, who husband they fucked or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But we're in the barbershop, well, we talk about sports, right? We talk
right.
about, you know, who gonna win the Super Bowl, who gonna win the NBA championship. That's what we talking about. We talking about man shit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But now there's blurred lines now. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, wow. So I guess these platforms of journalism then have blurred lines or having blurred lines like skinny jeans. Like, okay, man, speaking of that, skinny jeans. The last time you went to a department store and saw some real pants for men. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's not tight fitting around like some jogging pants. When are they, or really some real jeans and some slacks? They don't fit like they used to. I mean, is it me? So my whole point to that is it's a lot of blurred lines. A lot of things are being meshed together in regards to, you know, what subjects do we entertain as men? Subjects do we entertain as women? You know what I'm saying? And then I guess it's what it is now, man. But I don't get it. Real talk. You know what I'm saying? Like I like this debate we're on right now. We to be able to get on this platform like off the cuff radio and just be who we are. I thank God for these type of platforms because, you know, like certain platforms I stay away from because I know what it's all about. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like certain podcasts, I don't care how big you are. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to go to your platform and have an interview the next thing and then I'm there probably a week, 2 weeks or a month later because I was on your platform. You see what I'm saying? So, it is what it is, man. So that's my thoughts on that.
And one thing about it, too, it was always something where even back in the day if there was something scandalous, there was always an imperative about keeping personal business private. I know when you all rolled with P in the platoon, P was very, very stringent about keeping in-house business just that, in-house. And I know you carry that in your personal life. In addition to how you always carried yourself as a man to this day that, you know, like Scarface said on my block, you know, everybody, your business ain't everybody else's business. Comprende.
That's it. Absolutely.
You know?
Exactly.
Exactly,
man.
So,
that chatty patty ain't getting nowhere, man. And just like you guys were saying, we're in a weird space because I ain't never seen, I never thought I'd see men actually gossiping about who slept with who and gossiping.
It's crazy, huh? We was keeping our body count private when we was young. We like, look, we won't share a pussy with nobody.
Niggas out there on platforms today, like, spilling the tea of who they slept with. I ain't saying no names, but that's where we at.
Right.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro. So like the barbershop became the beauty salon. You know what I'm saying? Real talk. So, you know, and I think it's just, I think, like you said earlier, it's clickbait. These people just want to say anything for clickbait. You know what I'm saying? And say, hey, and then when you type in the title, because one thing about typing in a title on these digital platforms, in order to type something, that's, you know, if you typing it, that means you thought it first. It's premeditated. So you mean you didn't think that out before you typed it? So, you know, to get that clickbait, you know? So, yeah, man, it is what it is, man. In terms of doing numbers, those are the things that are doing numbers. But the type of person I am, man, I'd rather quality over quantity any day. Any day, all day. Give me the quality. You know what I'm saying? You know, because, like, think about it in terms of this. How many Rolls Royce you see or Phantoms you see on the highway every day?
Not many. I did see a Lamborghini on the road today, though.
But how many, as opposed to Hondas and Toyotas and GMCs? You see them every day, all day.
Absolutely.
See, quality versus quantity. You know what I'm saying? Just go figure that out. You know what I'm saying, you know, everybody can afford, the average person can afford a GMC or a Ford or a Chevy or a Honda or a Nissan. Everybody can't afford a Bentley or you know what I'm saying, a Bugatti. Everybody can't afford that. Yeah, man.
And that loses stock after a while.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. Yeah, brother. What else we got, brother? I gotta move on to the next thing, brother. I got another appointment gotta make. So it's been a pleasure to be on this platform with you guys. I appreciate the song that y'all opened up with, man. Man, that when you played that one, that Naked Head Love. I gotta send it before I sign off. I gotta send a shout out to the young lady who was on that track. She's from Wichita, Kansas. She goes by the name of Trevana, and she's one of the artists that I have under my wing. I have a plethora of artists and producers, you know, beat makers under my wing. You know what I'm saying? I'm sending another shout out to Lico Brown. Send another shout out to SE Trill.
Kansas City.
Zane Beats, you know, Donnie Arcade. He's from Cleveland, but he, man, look up Donnie Arcade, D-O-N-N-Y Arcade. Man, dude's the absolute beast. He's the next level. KLC, of course, man, my brother, man, on that one of the album that you played the song from, it's called The Unapologetic. You know what I'm saying? And that's the latest album that I have out. I do have an instrumental album called Play the Game, How It Goes. It's not an album, it's an EP. So it's all instrumentals, just a vibe, no talk. You know what I'm saying? No lyrics or no singing, anything like that. Just an instrumental vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Corey, my brother Corey Young, Steve Raw, where I recorded a good bit of that portion of the Unapologetically Moby Dick. You know what I'm saying? And hey, man, be on the lookout for this next part, my book, the Moby Dickopedia, and the album, which is I'm definitely sending it to you guys so y'all can, when it's time to promote it, you can go with it. And it's everything on this album. I don't have no feature on it, just all me, lyrically, and concept-wise. But I have a feature production from a plethora of those people from there, man. So Yeah, man, I think outside of me, I have I think about four or five other producers. I already mentioned one. Anthony Trill, another one. He got production on there. My frat brother, LaShawn Gary, he had production on there. DJ Burn One and the Five Points Bakery from Atlanta, they had production on there as well. So, yeah, man, this is going to be, I think it's my dopest project. Be looking out for it on social media. Oh, and I also have a clothing line. I have merch, man. I have a clothing line, and look it up on Moby Dick Porium. You know what I'm saying? Moby Dick Porium. And I have a campaign that's on there called Change the Narrative, what we were talking about earlier. So it's some T-shirts, hoodies, you know, whatever. Go on and get that. And I'll share that with you later on. So, you know what I'm saying? But it is Moby Dickpedia, the Moby Dickpedia, D Moby Dick Porium, themobickporium. That's it right there. So, man, look me up on all social media platforms, man. LinkedIn, I'm there. You can find me. If you're looking for me, you can find me. And by the way, for the record, I want everybody to know this. My name, the Moby Dick, my stage name, doesn't have a Y in it. Okay? It's M-O.
Let them know.
Space B. M-O space B dot space D-I-C-K. No Y. Okay? So it's been a pleasure, man. I really appreciate being on this platform, fellas. Man, I wish I could spend more time and chop it up, man, because I love this interview that we got. But I got some pre-existing things I got to go entertain.
Understood, Moby.
Definitely appreciate
you,
man. We did a big shout out to Sean Trey for making this happen too.
Absolutely.
Oh,
you're welcome
Sean
back
Trey,
anytime, Moby.
Yes, indeed. Shout out, a big old shout out to Sean Trey. Cannot forget her, man. So, yeah, man. Much love to y'all, man. Let's keep hip hop what it is. Keep it alive, brothers.
Absolutely. Thank you again, man. Until next time. We'll be in touch with you, Moby. Thank you again so much.
No problem, brother. Love, peace, and soul.
Absolutely.
Definitely, man.
Hey,
we definitely appreciate you building with us, man. This is a dope build. We're going to definitely keep in touch with you and promote any type of content, music, whatever you pushing, man. We right behind you 100%.
Absolutely.
So on that note, we out of here. Catch me tomorrow night on Screwball Radio with Black Poet and Comet at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, 8 Central Time. We thank you once again for everybody that took the time to join us and chop it up with us. And we out.
Peace.